Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, how we doing?
Doing really well. Spring weather is upon us. A lot of great games this past weekend. And looking forward to the sun staying out. No more snow, hopefully. And I'm doing really well. It's always great to be here with you.
Such a jinx. We have guests in studio. And yes, guests, plural. And I'm going to ask them, should I attempt how to say your last name? Or should I just ask?
I want to hear you give it a try.
Give it a shot.
All right.
Give it a go.
We have George and Chris Diaginkis.
Not the worst I've heard.
Bad.
Not the worst.
Close. What is it?
Diaginkis.
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 Yeah. Okay. Listen, you are much more
European.
Yes, than I. I mean, that's clear.
No, that's there.
That's a good thing, though.
If I were any more white and from New Hampshire, I'd be clear. So, makes a lot of sense. But George is at Bentley, and your assistant there.
Yep.
And Chris is an assistant at Merrimack College. So, We got a D2 and a D1 assistant in here. And I'm excited to talk to you guys because I think the hardest position in the industry in terms of coaching and everything is actually being an assistant. Because I don't think that anyone knows how much work you guys do and what exactly you do. I think parents think that the head coach does a lot of stuff, and they do.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But your day is very different. So why don't each one of you walk me through like a typical off-season day?
Off-season day, okay.
In the recruiting cycle.
In the recruiting cycle.
Yeah.
Off-season day. Okay. It's business as usual, to be honest with you. It's coming in probably 9:30 the latest. And just hammering out just kind of schedules on where we're going, where other coaches are going, like within staff. You know, what teams we're going to be seeing there. If it's X tournament, and there's three kids that we want to see, finding the teams, getting it all scheduled out, realizing that we can maximize our time, right? Going to these fields and not making it so much of just a runaround. And then, typically a nice little lunch. School provides us with a swipe a day. It's something good that came out of COVID. They gave us a swipe a day. So we'll hit lunch as a staff, kind of use it as a little unwinding. And then, then back in the office, and it's breaking down kids' film, breaking down emails, answering emails, booking hotels for travel, booking flights for travel, and just finding out where we can find the next Merrimack Warrior.
So I'm not full-time.
Right.
So I have a full-time job, mm-hmm. and then head down to Bentley. In the fall, we practice early morning, which is awesome. We do a good job of kind of getting to these tournaments in the fall. Coach Murph and I really hammer out a good plan. Very organized, try to be as organized as possible, like Chris said, to maximize our efforts on the sidelines for these tournaments. And practice plan, day before, after practice, we'll go in what we're going to do next. Kind of get the guys out, up and on down the field, and just be ready and just talk throughout the day too, via text, phone call, whatever it may be, email.
Yeah.
Stay in as much communication as possible with it.
I think it's interesting because, I've actually been in your shoes. I was a D2 assistant at St. A's and Franklin Pierce, neither of which was a full-time job, but you feel the responsibility to treat it like that, right? And let me tell you something. One of the benefits was the swipe. And we didn't get it from the school. I got it from a freshman because you're a freshman. You're going to swipe your second coach. So
we've been there.
Times have changed a little. I don't think that's acceptable anymore, but that's fine. Not being full-time and putting the hours in. I guess the worst way to ask this question is how I'm going to ask it. But I want to know the answer because I know for me what it was, but I want to know what it is for you. Why?
I love this game. I've been playing this, been around this game since I'm 7 years old. And, you know, when I graduated college and I went to work, there was like a little piece of you that you don't have anymore. And I don't know if it was a no team thing or what it was, but you got to, you want that back. So getting into coaching again, and then now here at this level, the why is because these guys go to school every day and they come down to practice every day. And me, I love that part, you know, being part of there every day and working with them, working with coach, and kind of just being around the game at any level.
George, what a lot of parents don't understand, and even players, you're balancing a lot of different things, family, full-time job, and part-time position at Bentley. And that's the one thing about lacrosse that so many people who listen to our show don't understand is a lot of assistant coaches at the college level, whether it's Division II, III, and in some cases Division I, are part-time and aren't compensated fairly. And it just goes to show you guys like you who love the game and just want to coach and give back to the game that you love so much. And hopefully someday, I mean, Bentley's had a program for, I mean, Coach Murph's been there for 30 years. You think they'd be able to have two or three full-time assistant coaches? Because there are a lot of other programs within these universities that have five, six assistant full-time assistant coaches.
It's just love, like you said, love of the game, and give back to a game that's given me so much. Able to go to school in Long Island and play alongside my brother was awesome. Coming through high school, going to Long Island together, playing. And then now being able to come back and coach, you know, you really don't do it for the compensation, because when you break it down full-time, part-time, you know, you're working pennies on the hour anyway. So, but again, I love going to practice every day. I love doing film, cutting up film, talking lacrosse, meeting guys like yourselves. It's unreal. Sideline talk, you know, tournaments across the board. It's a lot of fun. So that's in the compete level, to be able to compete. You can compete every day in a full-time job, but when you get on the sideline and you're on the field competing, it's, you get that, the competitive flow again. And you both know that. You're, yeah, everybody's shaking their head in here. And it's, you get that kind of fire.
By the way, Kyle will be signing autographs after the show.
Okay.
So stick around, okay?
Perfect, perfect, perfect.
All right. So in that vein, though, we're all logoed up.
Sure.
Like, I said it when everyone came in. I was like, oh, we're all wearing the schools.
Yeah, we're all representing.
We're all representing the places that, like, I mean, you and me aren't getting the money from ours. But, like, it's still, like, a love there that I think a lot of people don't understand. And yeah, you know, part of the reason I wanted to have you guys in too is because I have a brother. He's 7.5 years younger than me. And I think the only reason he played lacrosse is because I made him. And I beat up on him here, and he was brutal. But that's one thing that we always connect on. And you guys took that kind of to another level where, yeah, you're both coaches. You both played together at Dowling. So kind of walk me through how that happened for each of you.
I mean, I was at Peabody High, played there, great program, public school, and did a post-grad year at Bridgeton. Nice. Went out to Long Island, met with Coach Boyle at the time, and that was it. That was home. The guys kind of embraced me right away. And then, you know, Chris was on the Peabody team with me for a little bit there, and then, you know, I'll let you kind of go through it with you. But
yeah, no, I was on there, you know, with George, and you know, when he moved on and went to Bridgeton, kind of like made me start thinking of like, wait, there's more lacrosse to play. Sweet. And yeah, I just had fun with it in high school. Then I didn't go the prep school route. I kind of had a couple schools of where I wanted to go, but just seeing what my brother kind of went through, and not the recruiting process, but like I would say what the team kind of embraced, you know, that family culture and everything like that, it made my decision on where I wanted to go very easy. It was a quick conversation with Coach Boyle, and within a matter of, you know, applying to the school and whatever and getting in, I was going right down to Long Island to enjoy that time with my brother again, because he actually got to do that PG year. We got more time with each other, which was kind of cool, because it's, you know, now I get to go into Dowling my freshman year with a little kind of inside track, you know, of kind of knowing the program, knowing what practice, know the expectations, which was kind of cool. And George was a junior at that time, so we just, you know, I wanted to play with my brother. I want, you know, I wanted that family mentality and that kind of camaraderie, and it was a no-brainer going down there.
Great story. So you won a national championship in 2012 at Dowling. You were the captain in 2013. You coached two national championships with Merrimack College, so you're associated with three national championships, which is yep. very impressive. Tell me, what championship did you get the most gratification out of in terms of coaching one? You coached two, and yep. you played one. More as a player or more as a coach, or both the same?
Yeah, so that's a tough question. I would say each is different. And I know that's what probably, once you hear that question, everybody goes, well, he's going to say it's different. But it's true. When you, when we won in 2012, there's just so many factors that go into it, not just X's and O's, but like off the field, that you don't know what guys have went through, family, whatever it may be. That was a cool one. That was a really, really cool one for our family.
You weren't favored in that, right?
No.
You were underdogs.
Yeah, we had lost to Limestone weeks prior. Yep. Pretty bad, too. And we were sitting there kind of going like, well, that's it. And, you know, I've listened to your guys' podcast in the past, and you guys talk about some D2 stuff. And one thing that kind of slips is when you guys always ask, well, what's the difference between D2, D3, D1? D2, you have to be perfect, especially back in those days. Like, if you lose two games, your season might be over. Yep. You lose one game and you're in the hot seat. You lose two, it might be over. You lose three.
Yeah. Because of the playoff.
Hope you had fun. Yeah.
Because of the playoff. Yeah.
Right. That's a very good point.
Yeah. You know, and you had to be perfect every day, every week. And, but that's what brought those kind of players to Division II, right? That mentality of like, I have to be perfect every game. We have to win every game. And, but that was a fun one because it was in July. It was we got to avenge our two losses versus Mercyhurst in the Final Four, and then play Limestone in the championship. So, you know, we got our little revenge on them. But I would say the two from coaching, both classes, both years are special in their own way. 18, I would say, sticks out a little to me because that group of seniors, I mean, you saw us, that team, that group of seniors was something special. They got, you know, kind of both sides. You know, you lost in 17 and then you come back and you kind of run it back and try to get that, you know, to that same spot, and you get there and the look on those kids' eyes was, you're not taking anything from us today. So, you know, being in that locker room, being part of that, and being very fortunate to be part of that team and that culture and those guys and those memories. But that 18 class, those are some bad dudes, man. They you know.
A couple of Jersey boys on that team.
Yeah. A couple of Jersey boys, Mass guys, New Hampshire guys, New York guys. There's a lot of edge on that team. Yeah. They played with it, too.
I went to practice.
Yeah.
And I know Morgan said it was okay, but as I was there, I was like, I don't think it's okay that I'm here. I am seeing and hearing a lot of things that make this very much not okay. But, like, you know, you have to have your responsibility in, yeah. I think there's a certain culture in lacrosse of like, oh, no one's doing like hot takes. No one's like got inside info. And it's like, people don't understand that if you burn a bridge with a coach, you're not building it back because they don't have time for it, right? Like, you have to have a certain level of, not like acceptance of something, but you have to have a level of understanding yeah. with that coach.
Yeah.
And especially if he's got a big personality, like, for example, you know, we've had Jerry Byrne on the show. I would say Morgan is in the same kind of energy class, I would say.
Yeah, you got to have energy every day.
He is... There is no stop no. on the motor.
Man does not quit.
The motor goes and does not quit ever. And that, That's how you guys got to be D1 and how you won championships. And
yeah,
like you have to, you, I have a responsibility covering that to like not hurt it. Right.
No, I know what you mean there. Yeah. It, in, you know, to not hurt it, like you said, but it's like to also show,
yes,
like to show the people like, yeah, this is what we are. This is our brand of ball. It's our culture, you know, it's how we kind of operate. And, you know, if you let that, you let that thing grow and let that thing keep going and keep going, you know, you see, you know, what we can be and what we are and how we're moving forward right now. But yeah, no, it's a fun days in the office, fun days on the field, high energy all the time. You know, you don't need coffee in the morning, I'll tell you. I had one today because I wasn't in the office yet. But if I'm in the office, I don't even need a coffee. We just got energy all day.
That's great.
Yeah. Sure.
George, you're the D coordinator at Bentley. Tell me a little bit about your defense and what players you look for. What makes a good defenseman excel at Bentley?
Communication. Team defense is a big thing for us. IQ is another big thing for us. We like to have kind of like a next man up mentality. And as a team, we just want to, as a defensive unit and as a defensive side of the ball, we want to communicate everything through. And that comes from the goalie down to the far and away defensive middie that's got to help in. Being a goalie myself, that's where I tried to make myself different. You know, maybe not always make the save, but always communicate where the ball is and what we're going to do with it. Talk through everything and, you know, we want to put the right guys on the field that are going to play. Maybe not always, it's going to sound weird, but not always the best guys, but the right guys, the right group of kids out there, the right group of young men that are going to play and help the team succeed.
Explain that, the right guys. What do you mean by that? Well, what is the right
guy? Answer question, get another one.
Is it IQ, number one, when you're talking about defense? What is the right guy?
Always has everybody's back. You know, not doing too much. Doing your job, knowing every job on the field. So, you know, if you get pulled behind, you get inverted, what are you going to do there? You have that IQ. Having the ability, again, I sound repetitive, but communication is something that we're always talking about. Being whistle ready all the time, you know, always marking up. And, you know, you can be the best athlete. And that helps, of course, don't get me wrong. But having the IQ of defense, having lacrosse IQ, just in general, you know, knowing where you're on the field at all times for a good angle on an approach or you know, where if you're going to get beat, where are you going to get beat to make the slide better to help your defense out?
So specifically defensively, what are your thoughts on the hang up? Where you get a guy hung up playing defense, and he can't get the GLE fast enough to stop the guy. I have heard many, many variations on this, and I will die on this hill that hang-ups are terrible and stupid, and you should avoid them at all costs. And you should never send your goalie.
Never send the goalie?
No, because I don't... No offense. I don't trust goalies to do anything except stop a ball. Well, I don't care who you are.
That's the job. Stop the ball. You know?
Stop the ball.
Sure.
Don't get out of the cage and do anything.
Fair.
That's my trauma, though, as a coach. I had a lot of goalies that thought they were field players. And
They were proven wrong many times.
So I'm sure you have different philosophies. Tell me how you defend the hang-up.
You can go first. Go ahead.
We got no hands, right? You got to know, obviously, their dominant hand. And then... You know, have the goalie, if the goalie's, so say we have someone at X and we're hung up and he's a strong righty, we're just going to have your pole and your goalie on the same page. Who's going where, what they're going to do. You know, you might have a goalie come out and you say you get a wrong read. You know, it's really just kind of that goalie fighting to that kind of shoulder that's going upfield and kind of rolling back into the help. You know, use the crease to your advantage. I always like to think, you know, what's the worst that happens? You take a 30-second push and just trust your defense and, you know, make a stop. But I agree with the first part you said. Just don't get hung up.
Yeah.
Be an athlete. Get out the back quick. Kind of read and react. You know, if it's a shorty back there that gets hung up, don't get thrown into inverts. You know, try to make your job easier, you know.
Yeah. George.
Ironically enough, it's the same kind of idea. Just don't get hung up. You know, play.
That's the easiest answer.
It's the best way. How do you stop an invert? Well, just don't get inverted. You know, it's the same kind of concept. But again, obviously, when it does happen, you know, having an athletic goalie helps. Not that they're going to go out and play one-on-one, but you just got to kind of hedge them enough to let your guy get out there and play. Play that we can. You know, knowing hands is a huge, huge thing at any level, I think, of lacrosse. Yep. You know, maybe it's not so much in the youth, but, you know, high school for sure, up to Division One, and obviously the pros and stuff like that. But it's, you know, knowing hands and having an athletic goalie that can kind of get out and help you. Being a goalie myself, I didn't necessarily jump out of the cage as much as you can see as I'm sitting here. But it's, you know, just communicating everything on the backside too. What are we doing? You know, it's not so much on, it's off ball too. Like, cause he's looking to drive up one way and look up and, you know, and, you know, that helps a lot. So, yeah.
Chris, you won 2 national champions as a coach at Merrimack.
Yep.
Go to Division One, NCAA. I don't understand the rule. I don't like the rule.
Here it is.
I think it's, you know, it's terrible. So you've got players who won 2 national championship. Now they're playing Division One schedule.
Yeah.
You guys have had some great success at the Division One level. They can't play for a national championship for 4 seasons. They're banned from playing any postseason for 4 seasons. How difficult and how challenging is it, one, to recruit players to come and play, and to keep your players motivated, especially the ones who are coming off national championships?
I'll answer that last part first. I mean, the motivation is building something, right? Being that foundation in Division One. I mean, there's no better foundation than to build with guys that have played 2 national championships, you know, future record holders within the school, assists, goals, that kind of stuff. Great captains, great leadership. That's a good foundation. So motivation, and really kind of creating something there and being that, you know, next building block for Merrimack and also for Merrimack lacrosse, right? So that motivation is key. And then that bleeds over into recruiting. You know, there's people out there that'll say, well, and try to use it against you. You know, they can't compete. You know, sometimes those people that are saying that are the same people that they're not getting in either. So, you know, I don't think that it really affects too much because, one, I mean, as you've seen, Merrimack practices, it's a special place to be. There is a Merrimack guy, you know, and we kind of do a good job at going out there and finding everybody at every corner of the country that fits that mold, you know, whether it's in our backyard, whether it's in, you know, New England, whether it's in Florida, Texas, wherever it may be, there is Merrimack guys. And I think once we get you on campus and kind of introduce you to the staff and stuff and you see how we operate, you know, that sells itself there. But, you know, the probation period, I'll let what you say kind of reflect my thoughts on it, but I don't think it really has affected us. You know, guys currently on the team, like I said, it motivates them. It pushes them. You know, we have a phenomenal alumni base. We have an alumni weekend coming up at home versus Mount St. Mary's. And I've been, you know, working with Coach Morgan and our alumni relations staff at the school, and we have like 200 and something people already signed up, and they're playing an alumni game, like alumni versus alumni before us. And if you see some of the names on the list, you're going to go, well, this is going to be fun to watch. I mean, so just guys seeing that kind of stuff, it just, that speaks for itself when they see and they feel and they learn about it. So recruiting wise, I don't think it really has that much, but you might have your 1 or 2 kids. I think there's only been 1 in a couple of years that have said something different.
Good answer.
Yeah. I think
great motivation.
I think too, and I'll speak to this. This is the only way I know how to say this. Again, maybe I'm just at a loss for words today. I don't fight anymore because I'm old. But if I were to get into an altercation, I would want a Merrimack kid with me.
You know, we've sat in the office sometimes, and there is some downtime. You sit there, and you know, you might recap a practice, and just, you know, there's been practices where a fight will break out, and it's like, well, those are just guys going hard. Like, and making, it's not anything personal. They're just guys that are clanging and banging against each other all day, whatever drill it may be. And sometimes emotions take over, and I'd rather it at practice than obviously in the game. And then, you know, you'll come back up to the office and just go, that guy's a foxhole guy. Like, that's a guy I want. You know what I mean? I'd go, you know, step by step with that guy. And there's a lot of guys on this team and past teams that, like you said, I know some guys that would have, you know, a little street fight in them.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that at one point or another, I know this for a fact because I live tweeted the Merrimack Lemoyne game that you guys won in overtime.
Yep.
And one of your alumni was on me the entire time because you guys were losing bad at one point in that game. Then there was 7 goals in the last quarter or something like that.
Yep.
Came all the way back and won it. And he's just like, see, I told him, I'm like, dude, I'm just recapping it in live time. Like, why are you? He was like, quote, retweeting my tweets and putting like bad takes. And he was like tagging other people. And I was like, what are you doing, dude? It's a live thing. Like, don't take it personal. Like, what's going on? And then I was like,
They're proud, man.
And
They're
then
proud.
It finished and you guys won. And I was like, I was upset for a second. And then I was like, this is like the most Merrimack thing I've ever experienced on the internet. Like, that makes so much sense now.
Proud alumni group. Proud, you know, you come poke the bear, you better be ready for it, you know?
Yeah. It was, you know, people also need to know it's not personal when I'm like, hey, your team is playing bad. It's because they're playing bad.
Yeah, it's not personal. You can't, you know, sometimes it's not your day.
They know that, I think. Most of them.
Most of them. Most of them. But, you know, maybe you show up on alumni weekend, you guys can hash it out.
Listen, I will out-talk anyone. That is part of the job, man. I want to ask both of you two, the NE10 in Division II is a gauntlet. And all the teams, it used to be there was kind of, it was tiered out, right? Like there was like, you know, Merrimack and Lemoyne, and then it was, you know, Adelphi, Pace, maybe St. A's, whoever's in that kind of New Hampshire contingent rising or falling. Now, I think it's more, now that Merrimack's gone, I think it's more, obviously Lemoyne is still there, but St. A's has come up into their own. It is way more competitive and the level is higher than it's ever been. So I want you to speak to it now, George, and Chris to speak to it how it was.
Okay.
What's the difference? What is it like now?
Well, right now, I mean, the competition's incredible. We went up to St. Mike's a couple weeks back and played a very tough St. Mike's lacrosse team. You know, we played St. Rose up in Albany this past weekend. St. Rose was 5-1. That's another competitive NE10 team. Franklin Pearson Assumption was in an overtime game this past weekend also. Not to talk current stuff, but, you know, these teams in the NE10 play. And when you get on the field for an NE10 game, you know it's an NE10 game. My first NE10 game was the St. Mike's game. And you stepped on there, and that was an NE10 game. It wasn't like coaching against a regular non-conference game. It was an NE10 game, and we went after them. And they came after us, and there was fight that entire time up and down the field on both teams. To talk to what Chris said before, you have to be perfect. In Division II, you need to be perfect. But in NE10, you need to be perfect because you have the Lemoynes, the St. A's, the Pace, Adelphi, and then everybody else too. I mean, I think we're all growing in that same kind of forward movement, you know. I haven't had a long time in the NE10, but it is a gauntlet, like you said. And that's, we're coming up on that now in our schedule now. And, you know, it's, the boys are dialed in. Team's dialed in, and that's kind of where you have to be.
It's always been the best conference in D2, and I'll, again, I love dying on hills, dying a lot of hills today. But it is still, I think now it's even better than it was. I really do, just because the lower teams perceived lower teams are better. The floor has been raised as well as the ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, when we were Division II and learning about what George is going through now about the NE10 and the competition, it is a bloodbath. It is a, you know, even if it's a high scoring game or a, you know, 6-5 game, your opponent is going to give you absolutely everything they have. And yes, you could say that's with every game, every team, but there's just a different level when it's NE10. You
know, it's so physical.
It is so physical.
It is so physical.
I mean, it's physical. There's emotion. There's, like, you play these teams, obviously, every year, and you're playing them so much, and then the tournament, and then and it being Division II where, like, you know, I've said and George has said, like, there's a lot riding on these games. And, you know, you got to win that conference, and you got to go beat the Lemoynes of the world. You got to beat the Delphi's of the world. And, you know, and then the other teams, like you said, everybody will do what they can. And when we were in 19 kind of defending that 18 mm-hmm. title, you know, you got everyone's best shot. You got everyone's first punch, and they kept punching. And they kept punching no matter what team it was, from the top to the bottom. So it's a cutthroat league. I think we've now in our transition being in Division I, I think the NEC is a cutthroat league. Yeah. Not to jump around a lot, but it's very similar.
Well, people hated you guys in the NE10. You know that.
I love that.
I know you do.
I love
that's,
that.
That's why I'm telling it to you. I wanted to see the look on your face.
I absolutely love it's, that. I will tell you this. If I was still, I'll be totally honest with you. If we were still at Division II and we were still in the NE10, we wouldn't be sitting right here.
That's for sure.
And your brothers.
Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah.
I told him that from day one. I told him that from, as soon as he as
love
soon,
it, I love
as
it.
Soon oh, as yeah. he got, no, that, it's, as soon it's, as he got that job, I told him, I said, you know, if we were still in the NE10 Division II, I go, probably would not speak to you from December 26th, like right after Christmas. Cause I feel like I should talk to you.
Yeah, we'd have some communication
of mom and dad.
There. Yeah, oh right.
But
that's it.
Until like, I don't know, June 1st, maybe.
Yeah, till the recruiting, and then still, even then, we'd still be a little quiet on some stuff. You know, just
competitive. Man.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
compete. Look at the.
And page. If you were to play against each other, you'd send a message to mom and dad.
Something
tell
like
Chris
that.
We're gonna kick his rear end.
Yeah, I would actually like to have seen that. Not gonna lie to you, just to see what the parents would have done.
Yeah,
would have been kind of fun.
Yeah,
but,
it would have been a tough one.
There's plenty of t-shirts.
There's plenty of time.
It would have been tough.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity, and they give it everything they got from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rensselaer Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring, informative, insightful.
My observation, being the old guy here, Northeast 10, you'd go to tournaments 10, 15 years ago, you'd never see a St. A's coach recruiting, or even Merrimack back, you know, 20 years ago, Assumption, St. Michael's. Those programs or the schools have committed to lacrosse, and you see all those coaches out recruiting now, and that's why they're becoming the programs that they are. And a lot of you are competing against the same kids. St. Michael's the last couple of years have really done a nice job getting some good players in. Obviously, Bentley's always been strong, and St. A's and Assumption, a new coach. But that's the difference I see, that the schools have made a commitment to the program. I'd like to see them make a bigger commitment and pay the assistant coaches and even pay the head coaches more money, fairly compensated.
Yeah, I you know what? I'm just going to say it. So I coached at Pierce, and I coached at St. A's. My grand total earnings for 2 years, where one at Franklin Pierce, I was a graduate assistant, my total earnings for both of those jobs was $8,000.
Yeah, I can believe it.
And it made me want to leave coaching, and the reason I stayed is because the kids were great.
Yeah.
Those two schools brought in amazing kids. And I think that's kind of the thing that you look for, right? And you know, there was scholarship money at one of those schools. I won't say which one. And I was not in charge of it, but I was the one, because I was the graduate assistant, and the head coach was also the hockey coach, so a different coach.
Okay.
So he didn't come to practice until the end of March. So he would go to games, and I was essentially the head coach in my second year ever out of school coaching a program. And I was getting
Monday through Friday head coach, Saturday assistant.
Always, yeah. That's what it was. And it's not the fault of the university. That's obviously not the case now.
No.
But back in the day, that's what it was like, right? Where they would, you know, you'd have all these responsibilities as an assistant, which is why I want to have – I want to spotlight more assistants, because the struggle as an assistant is real. Whether you're full-time or part-time, it is a different battle, but it's a battle either way.
Every day. And, you know, you just do what you can to try to support the program, the team. Your head coach, whatever it may be. I mean, I started out as a volunteer at Merrimack, making no dollars and trying to find jobs and things in the summer and whatnot. Because, you know, I like to think that sometimes when you start off coaching, you really got to bet on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You got to really bet on, like, I can do this. I want to do this. I was fortunate enough to be brought into a culture and a team and a program and a staff that will support me and help me get to where I need to be. And Coach Morgan's done a phenomenal job at Merrimack doing that, and with great assistance historically. But it is grind. It is grind from going volunteer, moving up, and then doing ops, and then, you know, now assistant. I feel for a lot of the guys that, you know, go work the 9 to 5 and try to help convince the head coach that practice should be at 7 so I can get there and whatever it may be. I mean, guys grind.
Yeah.
Well, I give you a lot of credit, both of you a lot of credit. And I think we lose a lot of good people like yourselves who love the game of lacrosse. Kyle was coached at the college level. I coached at Dean for 4 years. $500 for every season. I mean, I did it. You know, after my fourth year, I said, I just financially, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have continued coaching at the college level. And it's funny, I coached at Brookline High. I was head coach for 2 years. I got paid $2,500. I don't think there are a lot of high school coaches today in public school that get more than $2,500 to be the head coach at a high school, which is crazy. Yeah, I mean, you don't get into coaching for the money. No, you get into it for the passion and the love.
Absolutely.
And more parents and players really should understand that. I mean, and it's a grind to get to I mean, you were a volunteer, then you're an ops guy, and the ops guys don't get paid a lot. Now you're an assistant. I mean, you're an assistant, George, at Bentley, not making a lot of money. You got to work a full-time job. So, you know, it's guys like you that keep the ball rolling and give you a lot of credit for what you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. But, you know, there's something to it. So, you know, if there's someone out there trying to get into high school coaching, whatever it may be, like, stick with it. Mm-hmm. If you can find an avenue, you can find a way. Like, you know, stick with it. And then there's plenty of coaches out there that'll answer the phone or answer an email to help you out. So, you know, like you said, we do lose a lot of people that are good coaches that like this. And they get burnt out because, you know, it might not be a lot of pay, but, you know, you got to have a good support system with that.
What a lot of parents and players don't understand and see, because I was one of those guys and Kyle was, is summertime, you're on the road for 10 weeks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're eating out of a bag, or you're living in a dorm room, sleeping in a different bed every night, and you go on a different tournament, sleeping in your car, you know, rubbing nickels together, trying to figure out, you know, how you're going to fill up your gas tank to get to the next tournament.
Yeah.
And people don't understand the sacrifice that these coaches make, that you guys make to make a difference, and a difference in all these players' lives at, you know, the college level and all the levels you've coached at.
Yeah.
The support system, I think you touched on it, not just from an institution or from a coaching staff, the support system at home's got to be huge too.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like you said, summer is a grind. And, you know, having a support system at home for me, you know, having my brother as a support also is a huge thing. But, you know, my wife at home kind of taking care of things at home while I'm out coaching or recruiting a tournament or any of that stuff, or every night at practice, you know, coming home late. The support system around has to be everywhere, I think. You know, mom and dad are always supporting us too, obviously.
For sure.
So it's like, just to touch on your support point, I think it's a huge thing. It goes multi-layered, I guess you could call it, you know.
Because then you coach, you're not questioning yourself. You know, and not feeling guilty.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you're coming home and you're welcome with open arms.
Yeah.
And the door's not locked. Yeah. You know, you can't get in.
Yeah.
No, it's yeah. And talking about getting burned out, that's why I stopped coaching in college. Because it's, and I was a head coach.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, it was a bad feeling to not win.
Yes.
And when you're competitive, and I am competitive.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
No. It's another hill we can both die on, Jack. I think, you know, from not having that, like, immediate support in everything that you do is super important, especially when, like, you care so much about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's really, like, the bottom line with coaching at the college level, coaching at the high school level even.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, like, the one thing that separates everything. It's the one thing that makes a difference in what you choose to do. Because people don't realize, we all choose to do this. We're all absolutely, like, smart people in the room. We can all go work somewhere else and make, you know, probably six figures somewhere. That's the reality of lacrosse that I feel like people don't understand. People that choose to be coaches,
sacrifice,
are former players.
Yeah.
And they have full educations. Lacrosse is not a sport where you just leave without a degree.
Correct.
Absolutely. Everyone gets one. It's one of the reasons, parents, it's one of the reasons that you want your kid to play lacrosse.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just FYI, I know he's 8 right now. Little Jimmy's 8. He's sitting on the couch. He's playing on his iPad. Maybe go buy him a stick. I'm just saying. Because he's going to get a degree. If he gets into school and plays lacrosse, he's going to get a degree.
Couldn't be more spot on.
And a job out of college.
And a job. Yes. Yeah.
True story. Brookline High. Two stories. One story, a halftime parent in the stands yelling at me why his son wasn't playing in the game. I walked into the stands. I had a whistle. I said, here you go. You can go. Go ahead. You coach. I said, how many practices have you been to? Your son's missed 5. Right? Did you know he missed 5 practices? Do you see how hard these guys work at practice? Do you see what we do in practice and how he competes?
Yeah.
Doesn't compete very well. You know, I had a goalie who didn't wear a cup. Got a shot there and had a rush to the hospital. parents wanted to blame me for it, not my responsibility. But parents have to understand that the coaches around these players 24/7. They know these players, their compete level, their commitment, their dedication. And when you hear parents complain about playing time or why my kid's not playing, they don't understand. They don't get it. They don't know how committed these coaches are. Yeah. What they see during the week is what you get on game day.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
And practice is hard. Games are easy.
Very well put.
When practice is hard, games are easy.
Yeah. You gotta push them for those 5 days or whatever it may be. But I agree with you. I don't mean to cut you off, but you know, that's the college coaches or just high school coaches, right? I mean, you go to these tournaments, and I know you guys have been at many tournaments with hundreds of people and however many teams, and you know, you go to these tournaments and you see it's just a sea of people. And now there's tournaments every weekend, everywhere. So, you know, we're traveling. We're on the sidelines, and you know, we try to be a little bit away from the mom and dads.
Under the radar.
But you know, you gotta wear the colors, you gotta represent your institution and proudly, and we do. But some of these guys that coach the club teams and the travel teams, you know, you got the parents just berating and going at it. You know, they're doing it. You know, I volunteered, you know, you mm-hmm. part-time, you go with the guys in the summer. Those are the MVPs, right? Absolutely. Like they grind. They grind, and they're getting hit with parents from all over the field, but you know, they're doing it for maybe a few dollars, whatever it may be, different places, different money, but you know, it's a true grind for that summer. Those coaches there, for sure.
I tell my parents, don't have any expectations, right? You go to a tournament, as long as your son's having fun, he's developing, have a good time. It's hard not to have expectations, but you don't have to express your expectations during the game and start yelling and screaming at the official. The officials get, you know, tortured at these tournaments.
Yeah, but officials. I have a ref story from just last year coaching high school. Boy. I'm at the head of New Hampshire officials. I believe he's the AD at Exeter now, Billy Ball. He refed a high school game I was at. I was coaching in Hopkinton. We were playing Pembroke at Pembroke. And he saw me and he marched over and he goes, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You're coaching now? You're coaching again? Seriously?" And I was like, "What? I'm just the assistant, man." He's like, I'm like, "Tell you what, you're not going to hear one word from me the whole game." He goes, "Ha! Ha!" Like he almost choked. He was laughing so hard. Yeah. And I was like, "Okay, people remember that I was a maniac."
Great. Challenge accepted, right?
Great. Didn't say anything. We lost on a last second shot. We got it off and didn't hit the cage. It was a good play. We got it all drawn up very well. Didn't drop for us, right?
Yeah.
End of the game, he walks past me and he goes, "I can't believe that you didn't say anything the whole game." I was like, "Things change. People change.
Yeah.
People change, you know?" So. It it was change for necessity. It wasn't change because, like, you know, I'm coaching high school kids, I gotta change me. It was like, no, part of the reason that I got burnt out is because I was angry and I couldn't, you know, I'm like working for nothing, and it built up in me, and I would blow up during games. I threw an entire bench down a hill. I picked
How do you
it
throw
up
an entire bench
it.
Down a hill.
It's one of those metal benches. It was just the single one, right? Yeah. The single metal bench. Okay. And I just picked it and just tumbled it over the side.
You've been hitting the weight check?
Yeah. Well, not only is he competitive, he's very strong.
Listen, I'm short, but I'm strong. That's just a fact. I'm every D3 attackman ever rolled into one person. Okay. All of us. Like all that. Of us. We all get hit. All shoot from the outside unnecessarily from 15 yards. None of us like to pass. We always dodge into doubles. That's me.
Not very good at any of them either.
Yeah, well, you know, not all of us. Not all of us can be legends like you.
It's cutthroat on here. I like it.
Yeah. I got a question for the brothers, George and Chris.
Yes.
So both of you have played, Chris, almost 10 years ago. You graduated in 13.
Yep.
And George, you graduated 11. In 11, right? Yep. So the game was different when you played. It's amazing how much the game has changed. What do you like about the game today better than what the game was like when you both played?
I like the speed of it. You talk to some people, they like the shot clock, they don't like the shot clock. I just like how fast and how perfect people have to play. You know, you see teams out there snapping the ball around. They're snapping it, and they're going to the cage, and makes defense have to play. Makes the goalie have to make a save. Makes the scheme, from a coaching standpoint, even greater, I think. And, yeah, I like the speed that it is now. I mean, you used to be able to get the ball, touch it in the box, and just sit on it and just hold it. You know, if you were up or you want to just be very methodical on it, and it's changed the game. With that one aspect of it, I think, you know, I was a three-sport athlete in high school. Chris was too. And now you're getting a lot more just lacrosse players. That, to me, is a little tough. You know, you talk about the burnout factor here. Yeah. You know, you do get kids that are exhausted or injuries or something like that that just don't go away. That's tough. I think you need to have more variety, you know, with players. But I think the speed of the game, but that's also helped to the fundamentals of the game. Yeah. You have a young man or young woman that is playing lacrosse all year long. Their fundamentals are going to be good. Their IQ is going to be good. And then you just have some given talent on some players that, you know, okay, you can't really teach that too much, you know.
can't teach speed.
Very true. Very true.
You say dudes that can run.
And you can't
dudes
really,
that can run.
Can't really teach size either, but it's, you know, the concepts there, the game for me, I love the speed of it now. Yeah. Now it's the fastest game on 2 feet.
Yeah.
Even more.
I agree. I think I like the shot clock. I hated the old stall ball. And then when it got into the, you know, on the refs and, you know, when are they going to call it? When are they not going to call it? Are they all on the same page? Whatever it may be. But the shot clock is something that definitely helped the game progress. Keeps you honest, can expose some things. There is some fun you can have with it. You know, if it's getting late in the shot clock, what you can do to kind of set up your ride early, you just got to adapt. The speed, you know, to piggyback off George's, is definitely something that's helped it grow. I also think it's leveled the playing field for some teams. You know, a team that might have just got it, you know, over the 50, touch it in the box and kind of sit there, they know who they are. It was like, come on, what are we doing? Are we playing the game or are we just going to play keep away? Like, but, you know, it's leveled the playing field. And it's been good to see because you got guys that can just, you know, run and snap it and the whole clear. It now you don't just do the old school drop back ride. Like, no, you got to play every third of the field. You got to play the D, the O, and the middle third. And it just kind of exposes the ones that don't focus on those things. And the ones that do, they get to play fast and free.
I like the shot clock because I really think it's taken a lot of the specialization out of the game, especially the face-offs. You know, there was a game this weekend, the team won 25% of the face-offs, and they won by one goal.
Yeah.
So they had the ball 25% of the time. The other team had it 75% of it, and they still won the game by a goal. So back in the day, you didn't play to win. Now you have to play to win, right? So
I see what you're saying there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would slow it down, yeah, so you're not playing.
Yeah,
they're stall. Not playing, stall.
Possession game
and
at
so
that point,
if you,
right?
If you were winning every face-off, you just slow the game down. The other team wouldn't get the ball. Now, if you know, you're not very good at the face-offs or the matchup isn't what you thought it was going to be, you still have a chance with the shot clock. And right, I also like now the defense is being rewarded. They reset the shot clock once you get it on offense, like they did in basketball, to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them even do it less. You know, you get the 80 seconds once you make the save, 20 to get over the midfield. And then, you know, if you get it over in 10 seconds, you get 70, and then it resets to 60. I think they should reset it to 50. But anyways, it's great.
We
it's,
could go
it's,
all
it's,
day.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I think it's great progress because before the defense wasn't rewarded for their good defense.
I know what you mean.
It was 80, push, goes back to 80. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was Cornell Yale, the game you're talking about.
Okay.
you're supposed to watch that game, so it's fine. I watched it too. I liked it. It was a good time.
I was there.
You were live.
Oh, that's right. We were texting. I want to ask you guys one last question before we go.
Yeah.
And I know your answer. I don't know your answer.
Ooh.
What is the number one quality that you would say a potential student athlete has to have before they go to Merrimack and before they go to Bentley?
No, he doesn't know your answer. You're going to be the surprise. Mine's known.
Chris, you know Chris's answer.
I think
I do. All right, you think you do, but you don't know. Sure. You don't know George. All right, George is going to go first.
I'm
George.
On the hot seat here. Okay.
Yeah.
Organized, composed, can live in the gray area of the sport of lacrosse for a student athlete. From a student athlete standpoint, you know, Bentley's a pretty academically heavy school.
Yep.
And you need to be organized. You need to be composed for everything that you're going through, up and down, upper campus, lower campus, everything. And you got to be living in that gray area of lacrosse because it's not all black and white. You know, it's not just like life, though. Same kind of concept. You know, so I think you need to be kind of a good attitude.
Yeah.
So that got hung up a little bit there.
So that gray area is, you know, staying positive, mm-hmm. and being a good student athlete, being a good teammate.
Absolutely.
You know, hands never up, palms never up.
No, yeah. No.
Right? You got to work hard, and it's not as easy as it looks.
No, definitely not as easy as it looks. But, yeah, the right attitude, that's a perfect way to put it. Okay, so attitude. I'm going to borrow Coach Piatelli's there.
Word. I'm nervous now for that.
No. I think you'll get it.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. Student athlete wise, on the first part, student got to be a good kid in class, right? You got to go to class, that kind of stuff. We're all here to get our education, or they're all here to get their education. So you need to be athletically. I would say you got to have edge. Like, that's a good word for it. I think you got to have edge. You got to have a ton of edge, but you got to have IQ, right?
Okay.
You know, guys that come. That are Merrimack guys that come here, you got to be willing to get coached hard every day, every single day, fall, spring, you know, through the winter with our strength coaches, by your captains, by their senior leadership. In the summer, when, you know, we're not hands on with you, they'll keep you accountable. You got to be tough, blue collar. You gotta be.
That's it.
I was waiting.
That's it.
I was watching your eyes, like going, like, is he gonna say it? Yeah, but no, you gotta be. That's just who we are. That's just been our foundation.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we're not the biggest against an opponent. Sometimes we're not the fastest. Sometimes we are the biggest. Sometimes we are the fastest. Sometimes we're not the most slick. Sometimes we are the most slick. But we are a team that will, you know, to steal Coach Morgan quote. You know, we'll out slick you sometimes, and you know, we'll out tough you, and we'll meet you in the parking lot if we have to after.
Yeah.
Dudes.
There's some foxhole guys.
Another question for both of you. Players come, you recruit them, you see what their talents are, you want them to come on campus, and maybe they don't have the IQ you thought they had. Is IQ at the college level, can you actually teach that?
I feel like you can. I agree.
I absolutely agree.
You know, it's like anything, right?
Yeah.
You know, any job or any trade or... you don't know how to ride a bike. Well, you got to start somewhere and learn how to ride the bike, right? But I'd like to think that there are great coaches and there's good programs out there and good club programs that, you know, everyone's playing club. I think I played club maybe my junior year in high school. That was it. And I don't think Georgie even played club.
There wasn't a club. It wasn't a club. It was just, you know,
just guys.
Played your town team and high school team, and that was it. You know,
summer leagues,
that's it.
But IQ, I think... Everyone has a form of that IQ. Everyone has something, you know, what you have at your institution, at your school, what you expect and what you demand from them might be, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It might be a little different. But I think, you know, you're not always going to get the perfect IQ kid. It's our job as coaches to teach them, you know, in this situation, in this, you know, situational lacrosse or – you know, this is what we do. This is our style. This is our brand of ball on offense, on defense, middle of the field, whatever it may be. And I think that ties into IQ. because then you learn what your program is. And then, you know, if you're a guy that just knows the rules of the game, say, you know, a set on offense or a slide package on defense, and you get it, you know, you're athletic and whatnot. But I think, like, that's part of our job, right, is to teach them the IQ, kind of get them to sharpen those tools.
I think you can, as long as the player is all in on the program, which is why they're there, they can be taught and they can be coached up on IQ for sure. Because they're all in, you know, they're asking the questions. They're in the film room. They're doing the right things.
Yeah. They want to know.
They want to learn. They want to be better. And that's a recruitable, aspect too, you know, coachable kid. You want a coachable young man or young woman to be coachable and be able to take what you're telling them and do it.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, guys. I could sit here and talk again. I wish we had, you know, we said this before we started the podcast. It'd be great. I know it's like, what is it, 11? You know, like, have a beer and have this conversation. It's the same thing. You know,
get to work, man.
I know, but you know, I'm just saying. I think that would be great.
No, we could be here. This has been a lot of fun. You know, thank you guys for bringing us on. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen coming into this, and it was exciting. But you know, you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks.
And I know a lot of coaches throughout all divisions in Nossel, not just in New England. Like, we talked to our head coach down at Wingate. We talked to guys all over the place, and you know, they've heard the podcast, and a lot of people are looking for a podcast like this that will give you a little bit of coaches aspect, give you a little bit of players aspect, and you guys are doing a great job. So honestly, thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Really nice having you both here, and good luck the rest of this season. And I wouldn't recommend a beer for this guy, Kyle, because we'd be carrying him out of the studio after one beer. Wow. I know you guys could carry him out. I couldn't.
It's actually, that's true. I can't hang anymore. Well, we want to thank our producer, Steve Safran, as well.
Yes, thank you.
Big man, well getting done. Us through it. We had a couple edits. Sorry. But, you know, with this crew, fun podcast, you need a good editor. We have a good producer in Steve Safran. So,
and you have a good co-host.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. No,
he's great. Without him, this podcast is 25% worse. Thanks again.
Just 25.
Wow. Just throws it out there.
Too much.
Hey man, I'll take it on the chin, only so much. Thanks again for listening to New England Cross Journal's Chasing the Gold podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Gold podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.